ghosts real? Several recent encounters suggest there might be more things in heaven and earth than we can dream of.
So are werewolves just a Hollywood creation, or do half-man, half-wolf creatures really exist? Now, tonight, we kick off our Conspiracy Theory Month series, which was a...
The legend of the vampire actually goes back for centuries, and it exists in some form or another in almost every culture. In fact, some people believe the first vampire story was in the Bible.
Well, for decades, only crackpots and crazy people believed in UFOs. That's what I thought, anyway. And then in recent years, it turns out that governments have been taking them seriously all along.
Try and clear up an ancient mystery with the help of a prominent veterinarian who says she can prove that Bigfoot exists. And he's related to all of us.
New reports by pilots coming forward over the weekend saying they've had multiple mid-air encounters with high-flying, fast-moving objects.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for tuning in to the newest episode of Celestial Oddities, the Pong Pair of Normal Guys podcast. This is Season 3, Episode 7, brought to you by Celestial Oddities Radio, bringing you the best and rawest underground entertainment. As always, I will be your host, Freighter Crow.
And I'm your co-host, Daniel James.
And if you missed any of our past episodes this season of Season 3, or even the first or second season, we ask that you go back and comb through that, as there's something for everyone in the paranormal scene out there, from deep diving into topics and discussions of the paranormal and supernatural, or be bringing on guests that are professionals within the field, or our Odd World episodes, where we take on phone calls from listeners just like you from around the world to listen to your extraordinary and unexplained stories. We always love to deep dive on this content and ponder on different possibilities and theories. If you are new to our show, welcome. If you are a return guest, thank you for coming back. We appreciate your patronage and support. For those that might not know out there, we bring you an episode every other Thursday night, 8:30 to 10 p.m. or 8:30 to 9:30. It just depends on how deep the conversations get. And that comes to you from iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Deezer, Spreaker, CastBox, Google Play, or Amazon Podcast. And even any of the ones in between that I might have missed, you can listen wherever you feel most comfortable. But by clicking the like, share, and follow button, it does move us up the podcast community rankings, allows more people to discover our show, keeps you in the loop with new episodes as they air, and gives you that unfiltered access to our past archives that we just discussed a moment ago. So feel free to browse through as you would please, but for the time being, stick with us as we have a nice discussion, you know, to jump into this evening. For anybody listening out there as well, we do run two other shows here at Celestial Oddities Radio. That is Knights of the Nephilim, based upon esoteric science, occult doctrine, and ritual magic, interviewing and talking with theologians, ritual practitioners and toolmakers, authors, and everything in between. It's a great show on occultism and, like I said, esotericism. So if that's something that fancies you, you know, certainly feel free to jump in and check that out. We air every other week in between this specific show, so you're getting something each and every week. And then we do have a couple past seasons of Uncovering the Underground, which is a show where we interview artists from music to modeling, stars of the big screen, comedy, oddities, and everything in between. So something for everyone out there, and it's always a pleasure to be able to bring you this content. Now, we did have to cancel our last episode due to Daniel had actually caught the flu, and then our guest actually was on the road at the time with an unexpected business trip, so we made some arrangements. We will be bringing him back sometime, hopefully before the end of this season. We only have an episode or two left, but we'll see what we can do. If not, we'll get him back in the future. But tonight is one of our topic episodes, and it's one that you guys actually had requested numerous times. Last year, we put up a poll asking what you guys and gals wanted to see us discuss, and one of the subjects was the Philadelphia Experiment, and tonight we finally get a chance to get to it. So, Daniel, I'm excited to deep dive into this one with you.
Yeah, man. You know, I would love for you to sort of maybe give our listeners a little bit of an introduction to it, whether they're familiar with it or they're new to it. I'd love for you to sort of crack it open, and then what I'm going to do is add my weirdo sci-fi philosophy to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you guys the common description that you would find, you know, Googling. I'll give you a wiki real quick of it, but I'm also going to deep dive much further into that with some of the other facts that I feel are pertinent for you guys and gals out there to know, get kind of a bearing and understanding of exactly what this is. So the common knowledge of the Philadelphia Experiment, for those that are familiar, is an alleged event claimed to have been witnessed by an ex-merchant marine. Or excuse me, let me back up a step. I can't talk. The Philadelphia experiment was an alleged event claimed to have been witnessed by an ex-merchant mariner named Carl M. Ellen at the United States Navy's Philadelphia Naval Shipyard in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, United States, sometime in October of 1943. Ellen described an experiment where the U.S. Navy attempted to render invisible the destroyer escort USS Eldridge and the bizarre results that followed. And it does get a little strange, guys. There's a lot of back and forth here that we can jump into. The initial reports and what people have probably heard, if they know a basis of this, is that this Carl Ellen had witnessed from another ship in the naval yard the USS Eldridge vanished from plain sight, reappear minutes later. It was surrounded by a green fog, it was said. The entire area got a little weird, it got a little hazy. All of a sudden, the ship vanished, and it did come back. Now, on a separate occasion, or they're saying it's the same occasion, no one knows exactly because things get skewed over the years, the ship disappeared again and was witnessed to have disappeared, started to reappear, then vanished completely, showed up 300 miles away in a different shipyard, naval shipyard, vanished from there, and then reappeared back in Philadelphia again. So there was two different instances where it disappeared, came back, disappeared, started to come back, didn't come back fully, vanished, and not only went invisible, if you want to think that that's the technology they were working on, but actually appeared in a completely different shipyard 300 miles away, then did reappear in Philadelphia. Now, when it was said that when they reappeared in Philadelphia, there was a number of horrible things that had happened to the crew that were aboard that ship. It said that some of the men caught fire and burned. Some went completely insane because of the different frequency changes and the magnetic fields that they were playing with. They absolutely, their minds snapped. Some of them vanished and were never seen again. Some were vaporized into dust. And some were morphed into the metal, which I think is probably the most terrifying, where they literally, as it re-manifested, half of their body might be trapped in 2 feet of steel, and half their body's just on the deck, and they're stuck that way. Obviously, that would kill you. Now, you could ask, well, what happened with the men on board that ship? You know, how did they report this? Well, it was reported to the families, supposedly, that these men went missing in action during a skirmish, because 1943 is right, during the war times, World War II. And it said that people had went missing in action or died in action and were never to be seen again to cover this up. Documents were changed to show that the ship never actually was even docked in Philadelphia. And, you know, the rest is kind of the lore that you know of today, if you do know of it, where, you know, what happened, how did it happen, and some things certainly to ponder on. But there's so much more to unpack here. It's believed that Albert Einstein was the one helping this technology, or the military with this technology, to try to make an invisibility machine where you could make ships vanish and disappear. This would obviously get us through radar, get us through the physical, optical visualization of something, just completely vanish. But obviously, not only was this taking place, if the story is to be believed, it vanished, but it wasn't vanishing like a cloaking device. It actually was vanishing, materializing in other places. So it was, portal jumping and dematerializing and rematerializing. So much different than what even the theory would be of that it was going to be a cloaking device. But it is said that Albert Einstein was helping the military with this. Now, what is interesting is Einstein had worked with the military before. That is known. And Einstein is also a veteran of the military, which is known. So it is interesting to know that. And, what is, interesting as well is that Einstein actually tried to disprove quantum physics or quantum mechanics by a theory he came up with called spooky action, which is the relationship between distant objects. This was to actually combat quantum mechanics. instead of combating quantum mechanics, later it would be found out that it actually helped support quantum teleportation, which is what this device would be if this is to believe to be real. It would be quantum teleportation. So it is interesting that, you know, whether he was involved or not involved, he did in fact come up with a theory to combat quantum physics or quantum mechanics, and it ended up actually supporting different parts of quantum study later on. So that is an interesting aspect as well. Now, I'll dive into a little bit of the further pieces, and what I would like to do here is I don't want to give the full story. I would like to hear Daniel's theories and things on it and actually swoop back with a whole different kind of ending than we would normally do. Now, let me see what else I want to go over here. Now, one of the other funny things is you know, for first, the story went on, and no one knew who the name of the ship. It wasn't until years later that it was actually said that it was the USS Eldridge. Now, what is funny is that for a while, people believed that it disappeared again because they couldn't find it on any U.S. military, you know, list. That was because it was said to have been given to the Greek fleet over in Greece to use for their naval purposes. But whenever, I guess, they were contacted by people that were interested in doing more research on this, the officials over there actually said they couldn't find the ship. They didn't know where it went. It just kind of vanished from their list of ships. They kind of lost track of it, if that isn't funny enough. But ultimately, they did rediscover where it was, and it was set to be decommissioned, and it has since been scrapped and cut apart for the metal and scrapped. So just kind of a funny side note there that it did disappear again in a whole different way. But, you know, from there, there's some of the other things that I want to jump into. I'll recapsulate on that at the end of the episode. But that is kind of the gist of it, that there was witnesses, supposedly, that this is how it had happened, that these soldiers, not only some of them died, went insane, got sick. Another interesting thing is some of them didn't and were sworn to secrecy, it said, but there was strange effects that happened after the fact. There's a story of a bar brawl where several sailors got into a fight or a skirmish with one another in front of a bar full of people, and during the fight, they vanished from the bar. Now, some of these soldiers apparently obviously were the same soldiers that were a part of this mission, if that's to be believed. And what I would think, and they didn't say this in anything I had read or researched, but I would imagine the elevated blood pressure, the elevated testosterone that they were feeling must have triggered something to cause them to then vanish, because, you know what I mean, it's not something that's a common occurrence. So if that would have happened on their ship and then all of a sudden they're fighting one another in a bar and then they vanish, it would have had to do something with the up dose in testosterone. So those are the things I wanted to cover to start you guys out, to give you a backstory. Daniel, go ahead and jump in with some of your theories and what you know about it.
Okay, well, as per usual, I'm always going to come at you guys with the more esoteric metaphysical perspective on this. What I'll do is I want to start by re-referencing a concept from a previous season about the super soldier programs. We have a whole episode about this that I encourage you to go back and listen to if you haven't yet, because it's really fascinating. And it's a real program that we have outside of our civilian awareness. So I discovered recently, just very recently, just a few weeks ago, a super soldier named Agent Jimmy Payne, aka Dallas. So oftentimes when somebody is enrolled in the super soldier programs, they will go by alternative names or aliases, because they actually do have, almost in a sense, totally different identities when they're in the super soldier programs than their civilian identity. So Jimmy Payne was enrolled in the secret space program from the years 1959 to 1996. Now, what he says is, it's going to be more sci-fi than sci-fi, which is why I really had to write a whole thing about this and do a deep dive on it. So here is what Jimmy Payne, Super Soldier Jimmy Payne, says about his experience and his involvement in the Philadelphia experiment. Before I dive into this, I do just want to make a side note that you guys have to understand that there is a type of surface level civilian technology that exists, and that applies even for our military. So even if our military, or even maybe a little bit of the top secret military, is still using technology and warfare that the average civilian could have an awareness to if they were part of the military or they researched it. But then you have a whole nother world, a whole nother layer of technology that is beyond the civilian awareness that really, you know, breakaway civilizations use, bazillion, gajillionaire companies use, and the super soldier programs, which is almost in a sense like a military force that is completely separate from surface civilian awareness. So I wanted to drop that real quick before we go into Jimmy Payne's story. So what he says about the Philadelphia experiment is that in regards to the Eldridge ship, he says that they were testing. It was an experiment testing a type of invisibility, which is consistent, that put them into a type of hyperspace. So it wasn't exactly like cloaking, like a cloaking device, but rather there's a type of energetic travel, which I think, Freighter, you did mention, but what I'll do is I'll give it a term. They use what's called as muonic energy. Muonic is like, it's a type of quantum, non-physical energy that exists all around us in the space in between that can actually sort of be programmed with matter. And it's not bound by time and physical space. So when you're using muonic energy, you can, it's almost like an ether in a sense where you can use it like a portal system to travel time and space without actually moving anywhere. So they were experimenting with muonic energy, which at the time was probably just a very small piece of what was common technology within this SSP. But as we are getting into more civilian level technology and civilian level military, especially in the 60s, mind you, they're just dabbling into it. They're just dipping their toes into this type of stuff. So that was the tech they were using. It was a hyperspace type of teleportation that they were using specifically to be invisible. So then the next thing that he says is that he was around when this happened, and with his involvement in the SSP, which you guys have to understand that they work with, they work off planet, they work with advanced technology, they work with extraterrestrials. This particular super soldier was actually piloting a ship that was alien technology at the time. And he had encountered, this is just what he says. Now, mind you, nobody was there, so nobody can say whether this is real or not, but use your imagination and stay with me. This super soldier said he was piloting a ship during, you know, his SSP adventures, and this alien ship with alien technology was a green sphere. It was spherical. And you mentioned that there was like a green fog, but he says that he had this this colored sphere. Well, as he's piloting this ET tech ship, he actually approached the Eldridge ship itself, and he used the alien technology radio system to actually comms the Eldridge. He tapped into their ship and he was like, "Hey, I'm, you know, Agent Jimmy Payne with so and so and so and so, but I'm currently piloting a ship with off planet technology. What's going on here?" And so they radioed back and they said that they're testing this technology and they're going to test it right now, and that they were doing some things they were right in the middle of, and I don't know if they couldn't stop what they were doing or I don't know if they did it intentionally, but what he said happened next was that they activated something on the Eldridge and it sucked his ship like a magnet and it smashed into their ship. That's what he said happened. And I'm assuming here that this has got to have something to do with, you know, the tragedy that happened in their testing of a technology with which in the 60s with whatever, you know, military outfit this was still probably relatively new to them. And something obviously went terribly wrong. And I don't know if Jimmy Payne's alien technology ship smashing into theirs was what caused their whole thing to make them, you know, jump all over time and space and then come back all fucked up like they did. I don't know if that would have happened anyways, and he was almost, maybe he was negatively affected by it as well, because in his write-up about this, he totaled his ET ship into theirs and exited the ship and got out. And he also talks a little bit about the technology that was used in his ET craft was more crystal-based. And everything on their ship with control stations and everything like that was used with light and lasers and stuff. Like, he didn't physically, like, grab knobs and turn dials and stuff. It was much more advanced than that. And he said that this ship had the ability to time travel. Now, the Eldris wasn't trying to time travel. It was just using hyperspace to cloak itself. But his alien ship could actually go back and forward in time. So as we move forward in his story here, well, I've mentioned time dilation in the past as a type of technology that the SSP uses commonly to go forward and backwards in time. Well, what he was saying in this interview is that he actually wants to, he wants to get access to his old ship that he wrecked into the Eldritch, which has time travel technology that he wants to leverage in a way if he can get clearance for it, because he is SSP military, which is above anything that we have in our sort of army or our Marines or anything like that. It's above all of that on a very high level. So what he's been trying to do, because he was involved in this accident, is he wants to get the tech from his alien ship that they confiscated. And he was trying to see if he can get the people who were in control of all of the wreckage and the technology from that experience. This is where it gets even weirder. He knows for a fact that the people, this is where it gets super weird. All of the people on board of that ship are technically still alive in a sort of non-linear time space where they were hyperspace jumping at the time of the crash. And what he wants to do is he wants to use the alien tech, which has time travel technology built into it, from his wrecked ET ship that crashed into the Eldritch, to actually go back in time into like the in-between time space, into that muonic hyperspace that I was talking about earlier, to intercept the moment that everything went wrong for these people and help them and stop the accident from happening altogether. And he knows for a fact that he can do that if they will release the technology. But as we get, here's where things get really complicated in terms of like, singularity points and timelines and stuff. Because the accident exists in our version of reality in like a mass consensus, a collective census, we have an understanding that this strange, bizarre event happened in the 60s to this ship called the Eldritch, which was using, you know, experimental technology for cloaking invisibility. So he would, in order to time travel and save the ship from wrecking, there'd have to be a type of continuity in the mass consensus of what we understand now, which would mean that he couldn't exactly go back and change it so that it never happened. But what he could do is he could go back before they crashed, and he can intercept the ship from then to now, where it would essentially emerge again, the way you mentioned how it was sort of like teleporting from space to space to space. He could get it here in one piece without the people being injured. But that would have all kinds of continuity ramifications. You know, maybe even almost like a Mandela effect thing would kind of break, in a sense where it's like he hasn't worked out how he could, in a sense, legally get that done, even if he had the technology, which needs to be released by the people who have it privately. It would have to, he said he would have to go back in time and he would have to integrate that technology in our mainstream science so that it became a mass consensus understanding that this type of teleportation and invisibility technology would be common knowledge. It would be public. It wouldn't be like a secret space program type of technology that only the advanced military uses, but it would have to be more so public knowledge released by the public avenues. Otherwise, people wouldn't accept it. So if the ship just came back again and all the people were alive, there would be all kinds of sort of like reality breaking ramifications of that. So not only does he need the technology to achieve saving the ship and its crew, but he would also have to almost like copy and paste and reorganize the continuity of what reality is like now so that it would make sense for it to exist in a safe way. As an alternative to that theory, he also is trying to see if he can still get the ship back intact. But if he can, and this would be in a way that's outside the civilian awareness. So say, for example, it just appears on a beach somewhere. It would have to be a thing where like it's covered up and there'd have to be people there who know it's going to happen. And there'd have to be, you know, medical professionals on hand to help them medically, because they would all immediately have to go to the hospital. They would have to go through all kinds of psychological trauma, you know, damage control of the experience of what they've gone through and what they are going through now, sort of like in a parallel reality where this has happened and it also hasn't happened to them yet at the same time. So Jimmy guy could kind of save the ship, but then he'd have to make it quiet so that nobody knows that it happened. And then that creates all kinds of more continuity problems where it's like, okay, well, the crew that's being hired and notified to help the people of this ship when it respawns, when it comes back, they would either have to be like sworn to secrecy and sign all kinds of NDAs, or they'd have to have like their memories wiped or something. It's all a really big thing that he can't just like snap his fingers and help these people. But because he was involved, from his perspective, he was involved in an actual crash with that ship while it was doing its testing, he feels responsible. And because a lot of these super soldier guys get mixed up in a lot of shit that they can't change or they can't reverse, or maybe they shouldn't have done, or maybe terrible things that they were forced to do, they all have a lot of guilt. They all have a lot of trauma. And so the guy says he was involved. He says they were testing mnemonic teleportation invisibility technology. He was piloting an extraterrestrial ship that used time travel properties that he smashed into this thing, and feels partly responsible for everything that went wrong with it. And now he's trying to use his clearance, because he has certain clearances, high ranking clearances as being an SSB asset, to get them to integrate this technology, backdate it, integrate it from what was this 19? I think he said it was 1969 or 68 that this happened. Integrate the technology into our mass consensus so that this type of technology is common knowledge. And then once everybody is willing to accept it in a public way, then they can actually use the technology to save the ship and the crew, get them back, get them rehabilitated. And then the only other, I think the term is caveat, is that he wouldn't exactly be able to save the ship and get them back to their own time period. They would actually manifest in present day. They would manifest today. Which is why there would need to be medical officials and psychologists and crew there to help intercept them, because their ship would appear again like it did before and they would all be alive. But they would be, you know, fucked up for a lot of other reasons. So part of my excitement and passion in telling this type of story is because, you know, we are disclosing suppressed technology, which exists. You guys just have to understand that these things exist. They have existed for at least 100 years, probably more. And there is a whole military branch outside of our civilian military branch that has been using technology like this for a very long time, including time travel. And this particular guy just wants to help that crew and see if he can sort of revert that catastrophe altogether by using time travel. And I think the scariest thing that I'm going to leave you with before I turn it back over to you is that he said that they are technically still alive right now in a non-linear time space. So what does that mean? Okay, well, if they teleported a few times before they stopped jumping and then they were all dead, somewhere in that time space that they were jumping around, they're still there in that Muwonic hyperspace. And if he can use his alien technology to go to one of those points, he can save them.
It's very interesting. I mean, I have to play the devil's advocate on this one because there's a few things that stick out to me. So, I mean, obviously a very interesting, you know, story that he has put out there and that you've certainly researched on. And there's some things in that story that will have connections with the ending here that I'm going to throw out at everybody, but there are some big discrepancies. So one of them is some of the dates you said are connective of parts of the story, but not the incident itself. The incident of the Elridge itself, if we go off of the original person who brought this whole thing to light, which is Carlos, and I had it earlier. They call him Carlos Ellen, but he also went by Carlos Ende or Endue. I had it written down, but I somehow messed up when I wrote it. The event happened between World War I and World War II. It was 1943 that the ship was said to have disappeared. So this would have been prior to this gentleman's involvement in the SSP program. So that's one of the red flags it would throw up with his story. Now, the second thing is, and what makes this kind of interesting, I'm going to go back and forth with some supportive details and some contradictory details. So Carlos, and I'll just go call him Carlos Ellen, his real name. Carlos Ellen kind of came about because he had said that he was on the other ship and seen this happen. Now, the way that we know that he said this happened is in a very strange way. The U.S. Navy was witnessing multiple unidentified flying objects while out, either on their ships or also out on mission or out on the ocean. And there was different reports coming in, and they noticed that every time they reported it to the government higher officials, they never heard anything back. They've even used the term that it was a one-way line, where they would report these incidences and say it was going to be researched, and then they never heard anything again. It was like no one wanted to get back to them. So the Navy actually formed their own little subdivision of separate research into this strange phenomena that they were seeing during this wartime. Now, one day they get a package in the mail, and within it is a book. Now, the book comes from an author named M.K. Jessup. The book was called The Case of the UFO. Now, this is in 1959. But in that book, there's annotations from three different people. The writing was different, the way the talking was different, and it was all in three different colored inks. But it was written inside this M.K. Jessup's book. So you have this book about UFOs and, you know, the case for the UFO. And this was during a time where there was a lot of heat on UFOs and there was silencing of anything UFO related. So this book comes to these naval officers. They open it, and inside it there's all this writing. But the writing talks about all kinds of wild shit. It talks about being on another planet. It talks about technology. It talks about all kinds of things, but one of the things that it talked about was the USS Eldridge, and that back in 1943, there was a disappearance of this ship, a reappearance, a transportation, a re-manifestation, and then these people dying, a cover-up, all this wild stories inside of this book. Now, that kind of put it on the map. They decided, it's kind of weird timing. A couple of things happened that's very strange. So they reached out to the M.K. Jessup, the author. He was one of the early paranormal guys, one of the early guys looking into UFOs and different things in the supernatural. And they reached out to him to see if he knew anything about this book. And he says, no, I wrote the book, but I don't know anything about, you know, other writings and notes within the book. So they showed him a sample of it. Right away, he recognized the writing, and he says, oh, wow, I've seen this exact writing in this crazy style before. He says, this is a guy who wrote to me by the name of Carl Ellen. And he said that he was writing me, telling me all kinds of different things, and in one of his writings, he even sent me his badge number and everything from the military, his military papers showing that he was a seaman in the Navy and that he, you know, was stationed in Philadelphia and everything. And he says that he was telling me more about this story of the disappearance of this ship. Well, it turns out that Ellen had actually wrote all of this in this book and sent it to these naval officers. These naval officers decided on their own later on to actually remake a copy of this book and sell the book with the extra edited notations in it, which caused a lot of frenzy at the time. But what's weirder is in between that stage, after they had reached out to MK Jessup, obviously he knows this guy wrote stuff in his book. He knows his book's coming to light. He knows that people are talking about it. He knows that this guy reached out to him. So he continued his research on the Philadelphia experiment. He reaches out to a colleague and tells him he has made groundbreaking headway in his own theories and understandings and evidence that he uncovered concerning the Philadelphia experiment, and that he wanted to meet his colleague the next day to discuss this. The next day, he didn't show up for that meeting. He was found in a parking lot with a hose from his exhaust pipe into his car, with his car still running. Someone had found him. He was still alive, but died very shortly afterwards from the exposure to the carbon monoxide from the engine. It's very peculiar that he would make a phone call to a colleague and tell him, I have made groundbreaking headway in this unexplainable event, if it's believed to be true, and I want to talk to you about it tomorrow. Let's meet, and then decide to kill himself the next day. If anything, you think he would at least wait until after he gave this amazing information. Now, some family did say he was going through a depressed time because of a recent divorce. He was having a hard time dealing with the fact of how much backlash he was getting on his books on UFOs and things of that nature. Because, like I said, this was during a time people did not like free thinkers. They didn't want thinking about this type of stuff. But that's one of the really strange things. So after his death, when these U.S. naval officers decided, well, you know what? We're going to remake his book with these notes in there and get it out there. And people really picked up on this story of the Philadelphia experiment at that point. So some people knew it in small circles, but it became on a much bigger radar at that point, no pun intended. And people started talking about this and saying, well, who was this Ellen? You know, was he an alien? Was he some type of secret agent? They couldn't find him. They tried to hunt him down. Every time they'd get any lead on where he was, the address would be no longer valid. He had moved all over the place, postage, all the strange things. They couldn't hunt this guy down. People came forward and said that they were him, weren't true. They were making up stories, these fantastical stories. And, you know, it just was kind of like no one could figure out who was this guy, how was he involved. He was the only person who brought this to light other than him. No one physically had seen this happen that stepped forward. In his reports, he said multiple people did, these soldiers died, all this happened. They couldn't find reports of anything. And once I said, you could say that they changed the records, but when they looked back on the logs of the ship, that ship had never been in Philadelphia. They looked back on the people who were stationed on the ship that have been shown to be stationed on the ship for a long time. They were still stationed on the ship. They talked to the original commander of the ship, the admiral of the ship. He was, all these years later, still alive. I don't know about now, but when they did a documentary on it, which is a lot of my information is coming from, and he came forward and said, I was the commander of that ship the entire time that ship was in existence as far as active in the U.S. military. We never had experiments going on. He says, none of my ship mates ever went missing. He says all of this is logged, and it showed multiple of these people saying, like, yeah, this is a hoax. This is a crazy man's phantasmagorical story that got blown out of proportion that became this conspiracy theory. And you could say that they doctored a lot of this stuff, but once again, there was only ever one apparently validated, if you want to use that term loosely, eyewitness to this, and it was a man that they couldn't find. And it gets really, really strange from there. So years later, a man from New Kensington, Pennsylvania, which is very close to where Daniel and I are, folks, he was involved in this, trying to hunt down more information, fascinated. He's into aliens and UFOs and all of this type of information. So he was trying to figure out how to hunt this guy down because, ironically enough, one of the addresses that Allen used on some of the stuff that he sent back and forth to the naval offices and that he sent back and forth to MK Jessup had the address in New Kensington. It just showed that it was stamped New Kensington, not a specific address on it. Well, he was from New Kensington, this paranormalist, and he kept looking and looking and looking. Ironically, by chance, he was talking to one of his neighbors at one point in time. And his neighbor happened to say, just out of the blue talking about his family, had mentioned that his son, Carlos Allen, can't remember if it's Carl or Carlos. I had written down Carlos twice, so I'm guessing that's it. That Carlos Allen was his son, but they weren't talking about the outrage. They were just talking in general. He says, oh, my son, Carlos. And he says, wait a second, your son's Carlos and your last name's Allen. He says, yeah. So he brought up the fact of the USS Eldridge. And a guy says, oh, yeah. He says, my son sends me stuff all the time. He says, I'll tell you what, if you want to hold on, I'll go grab a box of the stuff. He came out with this massive box of collected information that his son sent on UFOs, his son sent on the Eldridge, his son sent on all this stuff, and gave it to him. He says, if any of this can be any help to you, you know, feel free to go ahead and use it. Now, prior to that, all these people came forward saying that they were Allen, but none of them could ever show proof that they were in the military, any of their military IDs that were originally sent to this author that had killed himself. Well, sure enough, in this box right off the top, or right easily in the top, was his military papers from back then, was all these writings that matched the writings in those books, different books that he had annotated inside of it where he writes as different people. He was writing notes as three or four different names, like different pen styles and everything. And Allen actually came forward because he was pissed off that after these naval officers republished this book, all these people were talking about him. All these people were writing more books and making documentaries and doing all of these other things about him and this extraordinary story that he sent to the naval office and telling them about this giant cover-up. And was pissed that all these people were making money and he wasn't making anything off it. He actually came forward and said, I lied about it all. He says, this was the biggest lie that I've ever told. It's all fabricated. Now, years later, 1969 is whenever he said it was a hoax. I was trying to read through my notes. There was a lot of stuff to unpack on this one. And that's around the time that they republished a book. Well, in 1979, 10 years later, an author, last name Berkowitz, and then William Moore, released a couple books. They did one on the Bermuda Triangle, and then the second one was on the Philadelphia Experiment. Well, at that time, it was getting all kinds of publicity again, and people were talking about it again. And Allen actually came back forward and said, again, he changed his story. So first it was true, then it wasn't true, then he came forward and said it always was true. It wasn't, I was lying when I said I made this up and all of this. But his credibility at this point obviously was very shot to hell. That, like, there's just a lot of stuff that wasn't adding up. So he came back forward and said that all of this was in fact true and that this did happen. But once again, they had no other evidence other than this man's stories. Well, this guy from New Kensington, after looking through his personal letters to his parents, after looking through all of the random stuff that he sent, he came to the conclusion that these were simply the delusions of a madman. And he actually, as a firm advocate for supernatural, started releasing information on the fact that this was a hoax. He actually made a side note how crazy it was that he wasn't getting near as much backlash releasing articles on UFOs as he did when he tried to send it to different publications disproving this gentleman's story. People didn't want to hear it, but nonetheless, he had all of this evidence proving that this guy was full of shit. In fact, Allen then wrote him death threats, saying that when he seen him, he was going to shoot him. Years later, they did in fact come face to face, and it was just this old little wrinkly man, helpless, couldn't have done anything. And he said that it really was anticlimactic. Allen since has died in 1994. But long story short, from everything that shows, this is one that I have to stamp from my end in perspective as disproved and false. And sometimes, ladies and gentlemen out there, we will talk about ideas, give different theories, and even if this is false, it's still good to ponder on what could have or should have happened, things of that nature, or the technology that very well still could exist aside from this story, even if it is false. But I have to, my own personal research and things, have to say on this one that it is, because there's too much stuff stacking up. Now, with that said, there are a couple things that are just very interesting. The way that it all played out, he sent a book to the Navy. The Navy contacted the author. The author actually had contact with this madman. The madman had all these phantasmagorical stories that were actually pretty in-depth and seemed like the guy was a genius. And it launched this huge conspiracy theory. It launched all these thoughts. It launched all kinds of hype into the UFO community and caused a buildup of those things. So, you know, it had its own place for its own reasons, I guess. But like I said, it seems in this case, this was just someone with a very big mind for fantasy. Now, what I will say is the military was working on ships called, or working on technology called degaussing. Degaussing is technology that would evade magnetic mines. It would make it invisible to the magnetic mines and disrupted magnetic fields. That ship, that technology, actually at one point in time was in Philadelphia. But it wasn't the USS Eldridge. It was a completely different ship. It was a completely different type of technology. It didn't make anybody disappear. What it did is it disrupts the magnetic field. So therefore, the magnetic mines floating in the water that would normally pull itself to the ship and explode would actually not, you know, be pulled to it. It would be anti-magnetic. So why I find this to be interesting is it's almost like someone heard about this technology of invisibility to magnetic fields and spun that into the story of this happening and let their mind run wild and created it into what it is today. But what I will say for the gentleman, Dan, that you had brought up, he did say one thing that was interesting in his story to me, or to you, that you had recounted. He said that when he got close, it was almost like he was pulled to their ship. That would be a magnetic pull of some sort. This technology is anti-magnetic, but it is a magnetic disruptor to disrupt the magnetic fields. So is very interesting. It does stop clocks. It does stop anything that uses magnetism of any sort. So people wouldn't bring watches onto the ships or anything like that, because it would disrupt that. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is the information that I have dug up in my beliefs on this strange, most likely unbelievable, but still fantastic and thought-provoking subject.
No, that's right on, man. I really appreciate you, you know, adding that also alternative story. And anytime, so the things that I liked about your story was anytime a whistleblower or somebody comes out with information that is like, you know, suicided, turns up dead, or, you know, gets death threats, things like that, I tend to be a little bit more apt to investigate or interested to learn about those things. But with the story like this, guys, you know, we weren't there. Nobody really knows what happened, how or why, but we like to give you questions to ask and things to, you know, new ways to look at these types of things outside of the box so that you could sort of form your own conclusions and do your own investigations as well. And, you know, also, Freighter, just some random side thought here. One of the reasons why I'm really attracted to stories like this is anytime something strange, like dare I say Twilight Zone-esque, happens in sort of this mass consensus collective consciousness, like when we're aware of these types of things, it really is a fascinating glitch in the matrix because, you know, the controllers try so hard to make sure that people don't hear about these types of things so that we don't know that this... these things are happening behind the scenes. And another story that really reminds me of the Philadelphia experiment or the phenomenon of it, very Twilight Zone type of tale, is the battle for Los Angeles. Did you ever hear about that?
I don't think so.
Dude, it's the same thing. We're not going to go into it tonight because it could be a whole other episode, but I'll give you guys basically the premise. I don't remember the year, but this is, you can search this. There's enough civilian allowance about the battle for Los Angeles that you can search and find a little bit about it. just like the Philadelphia experiment. But apparently there was a full-on war between the United States military and like an extraterrestrial sort of craft in Los Angeles. So listeners, look it up. What year was it? Was it the 50s? Was it the 60s? I don't know when it was, but they're like on the coastline. There was like a full-on fight between like humans and aliens. And that's all you can find about it. That's all we know. But it's one of those things that's so out there and Twilight Zone that it, you know, there's enough that you can hear that it happened, but you're not really going to know anything unless you get into alternative, you know, alternative news, like the type of way that I research. Like I found these super soldier guys that talk about these types of things from their own perspective. But the battle for Los Angeles is just like the Philadelphia experiment, where it's like this weird Twilight Zone thing happened that we know barely anything about, but it's so right out of a horror film or a sci-fi movie that it's like really, really fascinating to investigate.
Well, you heard it, guys. If that's something you have interest in and you would like to see us do an episode on that, please hit us up. Let us know. We're always down for suggestions of what topics you guys would like to see us deep dive into, whatever guest you would like to see us bring on to the show and interview and talk with and have discussion. And then obviously, always like to hear from you if you have any experiences and encounters with the strange and unusual yourself. We do have one more call-in episode, which is called our Odd World episodes, where, like I said, we do take on phone calls to hear amazing stories. And Daniel, I think you will agree that we always get very fascinating stories and great people out there calling in or writing into us. So if that's something that you guys would like to have, you know, either being on the show or send in to us for us to read off for you, if you've had an experience that's kind of wild that you're just not sure what happened, please feel free to send it to us at celestialoddities@gmail.com. Again, that is celestialoddities@gmail.com. Or you can message us at Celestial Oddities Radio on either Facebook or Instagram. That is ran by our creative director, Natasha Sarver. We would like to give her a thank you for everything that she does for the show. She'll let us know if you have any stories that you're sending in, and we'll make sure we read them on the air. But she does manage those pages. I and Daniel manage the email, rather. So either way, you'll get in touch with one of the team here. And we would love to hear from you. We have a couple episodes left this season before we wrap up, and then we'll return sometime later in the year for season 4. But like I said, let us know what subjects you want to hear about. We love jumping into everything, whether it's something we already know about or something that we have to discover ourselves. I love it both ways, because it's something I'm either talking about something I already know or have to research more into, or something I've never heard of and I get to discover almost kind of right alongside you guys. So we love doing this for you. We hope you love it back. Feel free to leave us comments of what you think, whether you like it, you don't like it, things we could do different. Whatever suggestions you have, we always love to hear from you. Other than that, that's really all I have for this evening. But one thing I will throw out to you guys out there is, whether this is true, whether it's not, there are a few things, like I said, that are strange about the story. The most profound to me is why this author, known for writing out books about UFOs and stirring the pot at a time where it was not received well, would call a colleague and tell him, "I have made groundbreaking discoveries. I need to talk to you tomorrow." And as I've already said, not to beat a dead horse, but why the next day he would take his own life. Doesn't mean that it couldn't happen that way. Sometimes people, when you're depressed, you don't care if you have appointments. You just end up doing what you feel you have to do at that time. But I still find that to be very strange, because if he's someone that loved the paranormal as much as most of us, and you had this groundbreaking info, you would make sure that it was taped, sent to someone. It would get out there before you would go, especially if you're going to go, because after that, no one can harm you. And it would at least be out there for others to try to spread around, so that theory could live. So that's what makes me think that even if it is false, there has to be some truths of light. There has to be something within this story, because as all conspiracy theories or all of these strange and unusual stories, there's always at least a glimmer of truth in there somewhere, if not a greater chunk of it. So something was going on. So ponder on that. If you have theories or ideas of what might have been going on with this whole story, or what might have been going on with that author and why that happened to him, feel free to let us know on one of our pages. We would love to hear from you. Any last words, Dan?
Yeah, man. Listen, I'm just going to make a little special announcement. I will be speaking. I will be giving a lecture at our friend Natasha's Little Shop of Lilith on January the 18th, where I'll be giving an introductory lecture on the concept of extraterrestrials among us. So I'm excited to give that presentation. If any of our listeners are local to Pennsylvania, you're welcome to come out and check that out live and in person. I might maybe record it, maybe put it online. Other than that, we do still have every intention of getting our special guest Faust on the show. I think he's a really great guy. I'd love to talk to him and then have you guys get to know him and his content. In the meantime, you can check out his YouTube channel, which is Far Out with Faust. Please give him some love. He's a really cool guy, and we will eventually get him on the show. And other than that, we just look forward to a strong season finale for you guys coming up here on, it looks like, Thursday the 19th.
I believe so, yeah. So make sure you're tuning into that episode. And if you have time in between, check out Knights of the Nephilim on the weeks in between our episodes here. Like I said, for great thought-provoking discussion, our season finale is actually next week for Knights of the Nephilim. That is going to be with the one and only Frater Barabbas. And he is an absolute genius in the field of occultism. His books, his understanding of the mechanics of use of magic is phenomenal, and I really look forward to sitting down with him and getting to deep dive into the mechanics of power manipulation. So make sure you check that out, and then like we said, the following episode will be the season finale of our show, which is going to be on the 19th. And then that'll wrap it up for us for the two seasons of these shows. And then I don't know if I'll be returning back for Uncovering the Underground or not. I love it. I love interviewing bands. But I will tell you guys, it's a pain in the ass. Trying to get one person lined up for a show is one thing. Trying to get four or five or six people all together on the same page is a little bit of a nuisance. And after 80 episodes, you know, I'm kind of thinking about retiring that show. So we'll see what happens. I haven't decided on that one. But you can make sure to check us back on both of these shows, Knights of the Nephilim and Celestial Oddities, later this year for more great thought-provoking content. Other than that, we want to thank you for listening in this evening. Make sure you click that like, share, and follow button, and we'll catch you next time on Celestial Oddities, Paranormal Guys Podcast. Have a good night.